It's Dear Instructional Designer, episode 40. Hey everybody, and welcome back to Dear Instructional Designer, the show about the instructional design journey. I'm your host, Kristen Anthony. It's season 3 of Dear ID, and this season we're taking a good long look at design projects out there in the real world. This episode, we're going to be looking at Sponge UK's one-page adapt learning demo on street fundraising. Let's break it down. First, let's talk context. We don't have much to go on here, but we do know that the point of the demo is to test knowledge of the most important rules street fundraisers must follow in the UK. This is actually a pretty interesting premise. And as a side note, one of the other things I'd encourage everyone to do with these teardowns is to think about the context for yourself. And if it's interesting to you, maybe make a note of a future portfolio project idea based on this and how you might approach it. But more generally, if you're working to create onboarding for a nonprofit organization, one of the things that people who go out and canvas or fundraise would need to know are the rules about what they can and can't do, who they can and can't approach, and where they can or can't stand when they're trying to collect. This is essential, fundamental knowledge. It's also definitely one of those things that needs to be reinforced through practice. So, considering that the solution they chose was an online course made with Adapt, you might well be thinking, well, maybe a course wasn't the optimal solution. But as we'll dig into later, they've packed it full of interactivity so that you play to practice adhering to these rules. The solution here is full of ways to get people to practice doing the things that they want them to be able to do at the end of it. The other thing that this particular solution allows for is remote distribution. There have been times where I've questioned whether or not a course was the best way, but sometimes considerations like distance or connectivity of the intended audience turn a seemingly suboptimal choice into an optimal choice. This course, as I understand it, was made for a larger fundraising and development nonprofit that provides professional development and resources to other organizations about fundraising. So I'm assuming that the target audience of this course was member organizations and perhaps those organizations' volunteers or workers. That gives us two interesting challenges. First off, this course is a resource for other organizations, which means that as the ID, you don't have a lot of say as to how or where it will be used, or even know much about the specific audiences. You know very broad strokes, and it needs to be usable in a lot of different contexts. You could do a train-the-trainer type model, but that requires you trying to get member organizations to come to you, which could prove difficult. You could also develop more static resources as opposed to e-learning, but as we discussed, there's a definite need to practice the knowledge of the street fundraising rules so that workers don't get it wrong and cause problems. So already, an interactive course is starting to look more and more appropriate. Secondly, if you've ever been a volunteer or helped manage volunteers or any kind of part-time worker, you'll know that getting everyone in the same place for a training can be a very, very difficult task. If we assume that at least some of the people in the target audience of this course only do this kind of work part-time, then having a central asset that can be sent to people to practice at home or on their mobile devices as a refresher on their way to fundraising work and can be reused anytime there's a new bunch of fundraising volunteers or workers, then it makes a lot more sense as to why an interactive course would be a good solution to this problem in this context. As to why use Adapt for the solution, we all know that the tool is not nearly as important as the problem you're trying to solve. But again, in this context, I think Adapt works well because we've got native responsive ability. The same course can be used across several different devices, in a situation where you may not know when or where the actual end user might access the content. Let's tuck into the actual course. We begin with a super short review that anchors the entire course. It gives us the what's in it for us. Essentially, the text tells us that getting donations on the street is a viable way to collect money, but not following the street rules is a great way to leave that money on the table. I think it would be tempting to do something more here, like a motivational video or something like that, but there are times where what you really want to do is get out of the way as quickly as possible, and text lets you do that. So I think this is an okay choice here. Then we move quickly into a game which forms the bulk of the course content, and the point of which is to help the fundraiser character to do the right things so that they don't break any rules. The game opens up on top of the course page to give it as much room as possible, and I want to point out that the game is also responsive. Right on the game start screen, we have the goal of the game and the approximate time you need to finish the entire game. This is great to have because, and this point is important, you cannot skip this game. You can't just move past it, and there's also no way to close it once you open it. Now, I assume this was deliberate. They wanted to engineer a flow where a participant had to interact with this content. I think that makes a lot of sense given how much important stuff is in the game. On the other hand, it just felt kind of icky as a user. I can't escape this game. I fully understand not allowing users to skip past it, but I do think I should be able to close it once I've opened it, so that would probably be a design change I would make. The game is split into a series of mini-games. The first one is the 3-meter rule. I'm just going to stop and say here that I love SpongeUK's illustrations. Whenever they put out a demo, I just love the illustrations they use. They're wonderful and delightful. Would it have been nice to let people choose their own player avatar? Yes, but that might have actually been overkill. This works well. The 3-meter rule minigame aims to help us visualize how far 3 meters is so we can use that as a guideline for how far away we need to be from certain important no-go areas. We have a dragging mechanic that asks us to drag a circle on a dotted line until we have a box that we think represents 3 meters. I like that they were so clear about the instructions. Even after you press OK, you have some text telling you where to drag. I think this must have been the result of really good playtesting. This is probably not an intuitive interaction, so they did a great job of providing guidance. You'll also notice that they give you 2 bicycles as a guide. You aren't just trying to think up what 3 meters would look like all on your own. You can use the bicycles to help you. Once you've let go of the circle, a submit button shows up that allows you to submit your idea of 3 meters. If you get it wrong, you'll get some great feedback that tells you how big your box actually was. This is very useful because it gives you a context for how to change your guess the next time. For example, if my box only goes to the end of the first bicycle, the feedback lets me know that my box is only 1.5 meters. That gives me a huge clue that going to the end of the second bike will give me the 3 meters that I need. You'll also get some great sound effects to reinforce whether you're right or wrong. Sound design in games is so crucial, and that's something that I'm still learning more and more about myself, but sound can play such an important role in helping to trigger or relate certain patterns and behaviors, so make sure that you use it. Once we finish this minigame, we get even more information on the 3-meter rule, and it takes us into a short review of some of the visualizations we can use to estimate 3 meters when we're out fundraising. I thought this was so well placed. They use objects likely to be on the street, 3 phone booths or 2 bicycles or 1 shark, to give us some concrete things we can use to guesstimate our distance. Okay, the shark won't be on the street, but it is memorable. Now, I will say that the navigation here isn't intuitive to me. They have arrows on the top and bottom so that you're moving from slide to slide vertically. I don't have any problem with the vertical movement, but it took me a while to realize where the buttons were. I understand why they didn't want to place them on the sides and then have vertical movement, but perhaps a slider would have been a better navigation choice. The next minigame builds on our 3-meter knowledge to actually find our fundraiser a suitable place to stand on the street. Again, I think the design of this game is also just really, really well done. We have another good, simply stated instruction screen, and we also have, up in the right corner, a view of the entire street scene. That's really helpful because it otherwise might not be clear that you can move outside of the screen that you're initially presented with. The other great thing about this game design is that your choices become increasingly complex with each level. We started off easy with only one direction with the necessary space and only one thing to avoid, the ATM. Then, in the second level, we have to avoid the ATM and a shop entrance. And the obstacles just increase from there, so it's great scaffolding in the practice. I also like that the feedback pans across the entire street scene, showing the 3-meter boxes from each of the problem areas, so you get a really good review of your final decision. After we pass all of the 3-meter rule minigames, we're taken into another game that asks us to choose between who we can and cannot approach. I'll say here that since this game will be another 10 minutes according to the screen, I do think it would have been better to separate it out or save the progress in the cache or something and let people close the game and take a break. I don't like not being able to get out, particularly in between these two different sort of game bundles. That just seems like a really big issue. The game itself, though, is another good one. It's a simple yes and no game. By the way, I'd encourage everyone to take note of how simple these games are. They use an HTML5 game framework, which makes them a great fit to use with Adapt, but with a little elbow grease, you could probably do something very similar in one of the rapid e-learning tools. These are small, simple games, but they're very effective. Back to the game itself. Our fundraiser walks the street and we have to click on the check or the X as to whether or not the person is okay to approach as a street fundraiser. Feedback in the game is very simple. It's just a sound and a color. If you're correct, you get a pleasant chime and a flash of green. If you're wrong, you get a buzzer and a flash of red. So this is working off of a test-then-tell method. We haven't yet seen any content on who to approach, so we're using our prior knowledge, which may be challenged, or we're going to go off instinct. Either way, it's possible that you'd be surprised by the answers, which is great because it leads to some curiosity on the part of the participant. The juicy feedback for this last game is left to another section in that outer course, so we finally get to close the game. I'm not sure why this decision was made. Why not just put the feedback in the game? It may have been a way to allow people to finally escape the game. It may also be because putting this feedback content in the outside course means that a person can revisit it more easily than having to go back through all of the minigames. So I think that it's probably a good design decision, but it feels a little inconsistent. I think that there were some other design options that could have made this flow a little better. At any rate, the feedback itself is very helpful. Again, as a participant, I was curious as to why some of the answers didn't match my intuition. For example, that friendly-looking guy drinking coffee was on a business's premises, which is why he was a wrong choice. Whereas the rushed-looking businessman was, in fact, fair game, though they do put in the caveat that he may not have been the best choice in real life. The last challenge speaks to your approach as a street fundraiser, how you should talk to people. It's a fairly simple multiple-choice question. You might argue that helping people to actually practice approaching others for fundraising would be more helpful, But I think that in this course, with the goal focused on following the rules, that content and practice on successfully approaching potential donors is probably best left to another course or section that focuses on that. Keeping in mind that this is just a demo, I think that this would be a great opportunity to move participants to that next section or course. Overall, what I'm saying here is that I think it was an ending that made a lot of sense after the previous practice. You know, now you know how to stay on the right side of the rules, let's practice how to successfully get donations. Now that we've looked at the solution, what might be some measures of success? Well, I think definitely using the XAPI to get some stats on how well participants do on the games would be a great first start. It would be interesting, for example, to see if participants do better as they go along with the 3-meter rule challenges. Also, again, assuming that some of the end users of the course will be volunteers at member organizations of the overarching fundraising org, collecting data on whether or not rule violations for the organization decrease after having a cohort of volunteers take the course would also be very relevant data. Overall, I think this was another really great e-learning example from Sponge UK. I think their stuff is always very high quality, and I think that it has a ton of things worth appropriating into your toolkit. So let's take a moment and cover some of the takeaways. From a technical perspective, we've got a web page using the ADAPT Learning Framework. The nice thing about ADAPT as a tool is that it gives you something that feels like a short, one-page website. So it is short and it feels short, along with native responsiveness for multi-device use. We also had a couple of really great games. Those were also built to be responsive and usable on multiple devices. As you've probably heard countless times from other sources, the device environment or ecosystem is probably only going to get bigger, in the near future at least, so having an experience that works natively in those different contexts is very useful. I also really like ADAPT because it's open source and the code is open to you. I just recently read a quote that went something like, you know, wouldn't it be a terrible thing if the entire future was closed source and in the hands of individual companies? In an open source tool like ADAPT, there's nothing hidden from you, which means that you can customize and edit it very easily, and it's sustainable. From a design perspective, we've got a short and sweet course that's about 80% practice game, so the focus on practicing the desired behaviors is high. You know, I remember one particular course I worked on where we were able to convince the powers that be to let us use Moodle, the LMS in that case, to its full extent. Instead of packaging content into the Rapid e-learning tool, which is what we had always done, we were able to use that for the stuff that's hard to do, the interactivity, the games, the practice, and present the content natively in Moodle. And that's another advantage of ADAPT in this case. The content was presented very attractively, chunked very nicely using ADAPT, while the interactivity was embedded using another tool that fit well. And by the way, you can use ADAPT to present content and embed a game or interactive made in a Rapid e-learning tool as well, because again, they're good at that stuff, at the stuff that's technically difficult, the interactivity. So this is a tool that can add to your e-learning toolbox instead of necessarily replacing it. I also want to draw your attention back to those games. Notice how short and simple they were. One of them was a yes-no game. It blew my mind when I realized how powerful a simple mechanic like yes and no can be. I'll actually link to another completely unrelated game that shows this very nicely. But the point I want to drive home here is that a simple game mechanic can do a powerful job of getting you the results you want. I emphasize the simplicity because this is stuff you can go and make yourself. These games weren't full-blown AAA first-person shooters or role-playing games. These were simple but effective games for practicing the rules of street fundraising. That's it for this Teardown episode. If you're a podcast listener, don't forget to check out the video version. I'll have a link in the show notes. If you've looked at this example and you have some different points or things you saw differently, I'd love to have a conversation about it. I'm at AnthChris on Twitter, or you can leave a comment below the video. Thanks so much for listening, and I will see you back here next time. Take care.